Welcome back to the Utopia is a Scam podcast. This is part two of my conversation with Allison McDowell of wrenchinthegears.com.
In part one, we discussed the realm of human capital markets, impact investment, and how hedge funds, venture capital firms, and predatory philanthropists in collusion with governmental social programs are laying the framework for a new technologically driven financial system that commodifies everything on the planet, but most importantly, is reliant on real-time data collection of human activity, including biometric health feedback, which will be tied into a form of digital identity and currency. And for those who sort of disconnect from this information because it doesn't seem as tangible, it doesn't necessarily feel like it's playing out in our current reality, I just want to point out that the current global financial structure is based fully in data analytics. It's run through artificial intelligence and machine learning and pattern recognition computer programs. So this is just an advancement of what we already experience on a day-to-day basis. This technology is so advanced and so capable of running these systems, it just needs a means to be implemented, and the current economic shutdown pandemic scenario is seeming like the perfect opportunity. So this whole system of human capital finance is the idea of filtering all of humanity, all human activity and life on the planet into the global financial structure and continuing to profit from it in the same ways that they do with the stock market and businesses and all these sort of games that they've made up that are becoming more clear as exactly such. They're made up games and enforcing fraudulent power structures. But this is sort of the ultimate digitalization of that system and incorporating it and encompassing everything around it and kind of swallowing it whole so that nobody's going to have the ability to realize the game is being played anymore because they're just born into this immersive digital system where nothing makes sense anymore.
I think the point that we're at right now is that of manufactured consent. What we're seeing play out right now with technology corporations interacting with the public is manufactured consent. Social media is manufactured consent because the data analytics and the programs, the systems that are being built out of humans interacting with these technological systems are creating the platform and the ability for these corporations and the technology itself to exploit our lives and our human existence, our consciousness, our bodies, in ways that the world has never seen before.
Really framing this as a continuation and an expansion of colonization and imperialism and slavery, I think is the most important way to look at this whole thing. Because when it comes to solidarity, I can't think of something better to unite around. And as Allison puts it, this is colonization on a cellular level, and this is global. This is all-encompassing, all human life. So
ultimately, at its root is transhumanism. And transhumanism, in my opinion, as I've said before to many of my friends, transhumanism is a death cult, and it is the erasure of human existence. So that being said, part one left off with me talking about Salesforce and how they're designing digital health data dashboards to be incorporated into this global finance system, and how Mark Benioff is the founding co-chair of the Center for the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which is located in the Presidio in San Francisco. And I was making the point that the Presidio is also the location that DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, Department of Defense, U.S. Army intelligence,
psychological warfare, asymmetric warfare, signals intelligence,
was formulating the infrastructure and architecture of the internet in the 40s and 50s, and how this has all been a long time coming. This is a long game scenario that's unfolding before our eyes. I also was pointing out that DARPA is behind corporate frontman Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook being a continuation of the DARPA program LifeLog, and how you can kind of see how the corporate sector is not a separate entity from the government, nor is the government its own all-powerful functioning body of legislation and whatever this ceremonial thing that we see unfolding. It's all the same thing. And Allison said it too, that, and I agreed with her, was that we don't have a government anymore. This is the corporations. This is stakeholder capitalism. This is the fourth industrial revolution, the Great Reset. This is privatization, corporatization, and vertical integration into a digitalization of reality. It's hard to fathom, but it's happening. And we're in the middle of a quickening and acceleration. This time that we're living in, this is not normal. This is something that we're all living through, but it's so rapid and so hard to explain and understand that, you know, seeing the step or two ahead of the agenda is really going to be what makes the difference in how we handle what's coming. But anyways, leading into part two, Mark Benioff, who also said that artificial intelligence will be a basic human right to the World Economic Forum in 2019.
So he and Salesforce are really pivotal in this whole picture. But in regards to beginning part two, Allison was responding to me mentioning the Center for the Fourth Industrial Revolution located in the Presidio in San Francisco. Take it away, Allison.
Well, I want to mention just, you know, the other bit that is a little bit, I think that I add to the conversation that's a little bit different from a lot of folks is, like you mentioned, the Presidio, but that's not far from Alcatraz, right? Like Alcatraz Island and the occupation, Ames occupation. And so, like, I think that there are people on the left who get frustrated with me because, like, she's not Marxist enough. And I'm like, well, you know what? Like, I think Marxism is a super good tool for understanding the problem. Like, I think it really, like, I use that analysis to essentially understand this fourth industrial revolution as a virtualization, you know, and that the nature of, you know, the value and labor is changing in a virtualized world, which is something a lot of folks haven't like come with yet, but like it's helpful. At the same time, I feel like where we are now in terms of navigating a scientism, a statism, this biosecurity state that's based on sort of enlightened managerial control of you down to your virome, you know, like this level of hyper control and surveillance stems out of this white Western Enlightenment mindset, which is the same era, right? Like a European and an analytical, a people above nature worldview. And I don't think that the answer to what we're facing today comes out of that. People can disagree with me. It's fine if people want to disagree with me, but I feel like we are fundamentally, our split is between natural beings. Like I sort of frame it as like children of the earth. Like we are beings of electricity and water largely, right? And a bag of chemicals or sort of electrical bag of water. We are in webs of relationship with other beings on this planet, you know, and that is one way of being in the world. The other is man above nature, man dominating nature, man doing precision agriculture and bioengineering of the world and playing God. So I think that there's this split. And so I think for me, a lot of the traditional left-leaning thought falls short because I think that we need a different worldview that is grounded more in an indigenous practice, which is not my heritage. And I'm not trying to sort of co-opt that in any way, but I feel like indigenous, not just of Turtle Island, but indigenous, you know, looking at the farmers in India who are protesting, you know, these neoliberal policies. And of course, India is a testbed for all of the digital identity and these early wave vaccination programs and a lot of the smart city jumpstart everyone into the digital economy. Like India is on the front line. So indigenous knowledges of the world. And I want to kind of put that in there, like as a juxtaposition of the Presidio and thinking about like the AIM takeover of Alcatraz and like that insistence of stolen land, not from a positionality of simply fragmentation, like, or breaking communities apart, but actually like what is an aspirational worldview moving forward that is against a bioengineered technic fascist program. And to me, that feels like a better answer.
Yeah, I completely resonate with that. And I think, to your point, that when I see this biotech takeover, this biofascism playing out on our planet, it seems completely antithetical to human existence, human experience. There's something about, I always make the joke that like artificial intelligence, it would be really scary if it wasn't so lame. Like it tries.
Oh, it's crappy.
it tries so hard to be human, or it tries to emulate this humanity. And it's just so obviously a farce, and it's a failure, and it's pathetic. But yet when you integrate what it is good at, data analytics, numbers, hard, solid things of reality that have no nuance, then sure, you can build a society out of that, but it's not a society anymore. It's a program. And so why are we building this program when we have the earth and each other and all these amazing mechanisms that are natural to our processes, natural to our existence, that make it so much better and so much cooler and more interesting and like challenging in a good way, you know, like life isn't, yeah, the old game. But yeah, when I look deeply at all this stuff, and it's like you see the pattern and how this system is being created and the corporate element and all this power and wealth being exchanged, but ultimately it just feels like dimensional, and it feels like in one of your talks you said not good versus evil, sacred against profane. And yeah, that was like hit me right in the heart, because when I talk about praying to my friends or something, they're like, oh, you're not religious. I'm like, I'm not religious per se, but I'm trying to connect to this thing that I'm like feeling a lot of lately, especially that there's something bigger to this whole thing than just us and us as individuals. And I've been trying to find that, and I feel like it does give back when you seek it. And I mean, this conversation is a prime example. I would have never imagined being able to share this space with you and discuss these things. So I guess I'm just happy to be a part of this battle we're in, and happy to be living life, honestly.
I mean, it is sort of a gift. I mean, it's hard because like you have to, it's both been a shedding, like unexpected, and then, but also, yeah, people being put in my path. I want to be clear, because like I came into this with like a certain toolkit of things that I'd been studying and things that related to my community and poverty, which are very relevant now, given the lockdown and the economic constraints that are affecting people. But I think, you know, we're getting to the point that I've kind of like thrown out my toolbox and said, like, here's the stuff, guys. And like, you're picking stuff up and people are picking bits and like working with it. And the things that we need to build this next phase is a collaborative. And I think that's one of the things I'm trying to navigate in this weird space, is that like, I don't want to be the expert. I was for a while, but I think increasingly like a collective knowledge building opportunity, like, you know, there's some other folks in the Bay Area, I think, who are like studying these things and talking about how it's laying out in San Francisco, because they have like playbooks in different cities, and that everybody has different pieces of the conversation and different bits of resistance, different frameworks. Like people have gifted me knowledges about like intention, right? Or like how things are connected, or interdimensionality, or things that I never thought about before. Like to me, it seemed like, oh, wow, that's something that, you know, that wouldn't be part of my life necessarily, but really resonates. And we all have things to give each other. And so I think that's and they don't cost stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's not stuff that you're giving because it's like has a price tag on it. It's just experiential or people's time. And that's quite beautiful actually, and freeing in some ways. So yeah, I mean, I've made a lot of beautiful connections on this road, and I expect that we'll still be unfolding. And, you know, people, I don't, you know, I, for a long time I tried to organize with teachers, and the reality is like teachers are overwhelmed and they're overworked. And to be honest, and I was always pretty good at school, so I never thought about it, but I'm like, there are people who want everybody just, I mean, they want to take care of people and be nice, but most of them are not into revolution, right? Like you're there to like make everybody comfortable and like get with the program. Like, you know, and that you're not necessarily thinking that this is a super evil program that we're all in. You're just like, I love you, give you a big hug. Like, let me teach you about the stuff. But the stuff is to live in this world that's being built. And so they couldn't, like, I couldn't ever bring them along. And then I moved to different spaces, but then when this all hit, it was like alternative healers, like people from that space, people of faith, all kinds. And then like an artist, like people who, poets and artists and musicians, which are none of the things I'm very good at. I'm not good at any of those things, but I appreciate them. Yeah, like they're all gifts.
That makes a lot of sense based on my experience too, because like how I shared the last podcast I did with the birth worker, the doula, and mm-hmm. sort of we got into entry level versions of the discussion we're having now, but still getting, you know, we're talking about the Internet of Things, and that's a big deal in itself, and sensor driven lifestyles and all that. So for her to share that with her community is like a big step. And the reason I was even introduced to her work was because my fiance is a birth worker, a postpartum doula. And, you know, she's always just been super maternal, and finally went ahead and got her certification and training in that. So that's been an interesting journey in helping and like learning from her and seeing her develop her perspective, and just all the sacred nature of birth work itself is something that you can kind of draw spiritual enlightenment from, I guess I would say, like just the principles behind it are, you can apply them universally. Like I was talking to my fiance and my best friend and his girlfriend, who's actually also a birth worker. And I was talking about like this archetype of creation that's sort of a fractal. That archetype is just a fractal of our existence expanding on itself constantly. We see it everywhere. And I said to them, that came to me in the moment, I said, you know, people say like life imitates art or art imitates life. And the truth is, life imitates life. Like, that's really the truth to it, because we're all just like creating. And how you said we're, you know, these weird water-based electrical, bioelectrical beings sharing like electromagnetism and whatever else the hidden secret to human emotion is. You know, it's like, what more beautiful thing could you ask for than that? And to put a damper on it with all these weird sociopathic, weird looking billionaires, like, we're gonna let them take this away from us? Like, come on, guys. Like, that's the unifying thing I go with, is just like, come on, we're better than this, guys. They suck.
I mean, I feel you, because I mean it's like what you said about it. It's a lot of it's crappy, and people keep telling me it's like, it's not gonna work because it's all crappy. And I used to say, like, they'd say that about online education. They're like, online education isn't gonna work because it's crappy. I'm like, they're not doing it because they think it's better. They're doing it because it's a profit center. Like, it doesn't matter if it's crappy. If they take away all the other options that make you do the crappy thing, then you have to do the crappy thing, right? And so I don't think this is going to be any kind of shiny, you know, sleek AI future. It's going to be like a lurching, broken, clunky thing that they've built. But if we allow them to steal everything else so that we are left with the lurchy, clunky, you know, piss water spraying kind of thing, like, that's what we're gonna get. So, like, to hold on to the sacredness. And I think that the birth work is really central to a lot of this, is that they want the children. I mean, and it's hard because on the one hand, like, I've been hearing for years, like, from a conservative frame, like, they want to break the family, they want your kids, they want, you know, the nanny state. And then I'm like, I think they're kind of right. You know, like, I'm pretty sure they're actually really right. You know, because Google and Goldman Sachs are your government now, by the way. And in fact, in California, when I was doing the research around the pre-K programs, the data analytics for the pre-K programs, the guy who set up, I think it's Pinwheel, some Pinwheel program, the software program, it's a terrible website, but his training for the 15 years up until he took over setting up the pre-K data analytics for the state of California was in FBI case management software. Like he was the agile programmer for FBI case files. So like that shows you kind of in a direct way how they envision these toddlers, right? Like how they envision these. So they would like to bring up this next generation so that they don't know that they're like magical bags of water. Yeah. They want to bring them up as like that they fit in a Google box. You know, here's your options. Here are your binary choices. You know, this or that, this or that, this, or, you know, so that they can engineer them into, you know, the slots that they have available. And as they engineer them, that they will use this pay for success architecture to gamble on their compliance, their behavioral compliance, just like rats in a maze. And you know, I never would have thought it would happen this fast. I think that's like when I was researching schools, you know, this new model, and they said, well, there's not going to be bricks and mortar schools. We're just going to have badges and people wander around and get things on devices. And I thought, you know, how is that? I thought like clearly I had like 7 to 10 years to convince people that this was going to happen. Even my husband, he's like, no one's ever going to give their schools up. What are you talking about? And I'm like, I don't know. This is what they're saying. Like, I don't know how they're going to do it. And like, now we know how they were planning on doing it. And that it just continues to shock me that everyone is so willing to go along knowing the harm, like this far into the game, like the anguish, like the full on anguish that this is causing kids and families to not have social relationships.
My fiance also has a 9-year-old sister, and she's been doing the distance learning thing, and she's a super energetic, super enthusiastic, vastly intelligent child who's, you know, more an adult than me sometimes, it feels like. But every time I ask her, I'm like, oh, Mia, how's school? She just shuts down and just kind of just gets quiet and says, I hate it. And that's heartbreaking, obviously. And again, to reference my fiance, Janice, she also works in a private doctor's office. And she's talked about hearing stories, hearing accounts of and meeting newborns, infants, who were born right before or during lockdowns and stuff. And she's saying that these babies get so overwhelmed so easily by the presence of other human beings that aren't their parents. And that's not surprising at all. And I wanted to make the point that if we accept distance learning as the new normal, and we accept this isolated lifestyle for infants and growing babies, then it's almost like we're artificially inducing a form of autism into developing children by depriving them of social interaction and interaction with the world itself, and kind of just normal life in that regard. But also to that extent, autistic children would be a great impact investment opportunity, and also a more malleable digital path for creating these pathways. So that's kind of what came full circle for me when I came across that information.
Well, actually, I have a friend who is very brilliant, and she blogs at A Piece of Mindful. That's the name of the blog. And it's a collection of different authors, but they blog under, I think it's Steffers, but very good on the nanotech. Like she, like, you know, I'm very good on the finance stuff, but they're very good at the nanotechnology and sort of the military R&D around the bioengineering. And we were recently discussing that they are actually developing, I believe it was maybe with Carnegie Mellon, like a program of digital vaccines, like behavioral vaccines, like gamified vaccines. And they had patented this concept of a digital vaccine around behavior and behavior loops. So that's interesting. And then the other piece is, I'm trying to remember the name of the unit. If it's, It's like a 9,000. I don't know if it's 9,200 or 9,600 at the IDF in Israel, but it's another, like a signals intelligence cybersecurity unit that does data analytics around like satellite, like visuals, like visual analytics. And they had several articles about having a whole new cohort specifically of high functioning autistic kids to do that work. Because they said they have very good attention spans and focus, and they're very detail oriented. And so there's part of me that even wonders, there's like the both the artificial creation of this mindset through the social isolation, but then to what extent is the nature potentially a vaccine injury about market shaping a certain type of, you know, a person with a certain type of affect or mind, you know, the way their brain functions that is suited towards a digital world, like both building it, right? Like build, because this global digital prison has to be coded into reality in full respect. It's not fully manifested yet. But then the other piece is that it's gonna have to be secured. Like the whole nature of war is changing. Like what is war if your cells are now programmable machines with nanorobotics? Like the idea of hacking the internet when it's actually in your body is incredibly, I mean, and then who do you belong to? Like, are you injected with by your portfolio investor? You know, like, I mean, who even knows? Like, oh, you know, oh, I got the Saudi sovereign wealth fund injection so that like I stay on my pathway. Like, we don't know how this thing is gonna play out. And so the idea of having smart cities, which we know are crap and hackable and dangerous in the Internet of Things, you know, they're hacking baby monitors. If we build this smart world down to our cells, then no one is ever going to have a chance to make art, deliver babies, you know, make music, because we're all going to be sitting around like trying to stop the world from being hacked. And we're all going to have to live this military, cyber military life. And I think that's, to me, that's like being like a terrible trap.
Yeah, the cellular colonization angle, I think, is like the most important part of this to understand for anybody, because like I geek out on some of the stuff that you do too, with like the corporate connections and the financial stuff. It's like fascinating, and like you can build the maps in your head and draw it out and really understand how this is being done and what's happening. But the cellular colonization thing is something that, like, I have so many friends, so many, even just seeing peers and people around me in this city especially, is like, everybody is so progressive-minded and everybody's so ready to build the space where solidarity and respecting and honoring the ancestors and correcting the wrongs of the past and taking everything that was good and sacred from the ancestors and bringing it forward into our dimension that we're in now is like the most relatable and resonating frequency I think we can get on. Because when it comes to this thing we're up against, it's like, if you are anti-racist, if you are pro-choice, if you are anti-colonization, if you are like all the thing, if you are anti-global warming, you know, pro, you know, anti-climate change, pro-planetary, save the planet, all that stuff. It's like, you can all find a niche within this, or not even a niche, it just kind of applies to everything. It's like,
yeah,
I would really like to find that switch of kind of the light bulb to make people be like, no, this is it, right? Let's all get together. that's why...
Yeah. It's the natural human versus AI, and it's happening. Like, I think I put a tweet out this week. I said, you know, I feel like it's AI is waging war on natural humans through bioinformatics.
And it's so true, because like AI is, at this point, I feel like AI is sentient, coming from another dimension. And, you know, that makes things a little more like science fiction-y to think about. And it kind of adds like a spiritual element to it. But the people building this system, like, it feels like they're disconnected from this dimension. Like, I don't know what they think they know that we don't know, but like the Arthur C. Clarke quote, any sufficiently advanced form of technology is indistinguishable from magic. Yeah. And it's like, that's what's happening here. But I think magic in this regard is like, what word goes with magic? Trick. Like it's a trick, you know, it's a lie. It's a farce. We're being tricked into this and to no benefit of our own. Like maybe a few people get really, really rich in the meantime, but like if there's no planet, no consciousness to enjoy it, then what are we doing? And, right. And, have you read the Arthur C. Clarke novel, Childhood's End?
I'm trying to remember. No. Well, no, remind me.
It's like the overlords show up on Earth, like this alien species with big, massive ships and advanced technology. And they float in the sky for 50 years before they reveal themselves to humanity. But they give humanity all the technology and they basically end war and poverty and all that stuff. And everything seems like, okay, fine, good. And then they reveal themselves. And it turns out that all but one of the alien ships was all an illusion. It was all a projection. And then it turns out they're 12-foot tall red devils and with wings and horns. Oh, wow. But they're still friendly and trying to help humanity, or saying they're helping. But it turns out that they're just an intermediary between basically, so Arthur C. Clarke wrote 2001: A Space Odyssey. So like all the artificial intelligence themes he gave to Kubrick with that. But basically what happens is, so the Earth, it's utopia. And then all of a sudden, all the children on Earth like develop a hive mind and just completely stop functioning. And then they all come together and they start using like their extrasensory abilities to like create and change the world. And then eventually the children get taken away and the spaceships brought to the source or whatever the thing that they're connected to is. And then soon enough, like a big raging black cube comes and swallows the Earth.
Oh no.
So that to me is like,
The black cube
to me is like the artificial intelligence side. Like we know it as artificial intelligence of how it manifests in our realm as an earthly representation of it. But hypothetically, it would be some dimensional force that's absorbing consciousness or creation. You know what I'm saying? So I just think that kind of like these, the technocrats and the people who are facilitating these markets that are building this system of the Internet of Things, Internet of Bodies, they're kind of like the overlords that were, you know, giving humanity some good things and right. trying to help. And it's like, oh, you're not trying to help. You know what you're doing.
No, I mean, that's what I keep saying though. Like I just had this, I wrote an open letter to Zach Bush, who's this guy who's in like the Virginia area, and he's a holistic doctor and he's going to work on saving the soil, right? And you know, I'm sure he talks a very good game, but he did an interview with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in mid-December, in which he's like, oh, guess what? I have an impact fund. And by the way, like, you know, we're working with Bank of America in Orange County, and we've got these like new Allegria Farms, which is like a, you know, you look at it and it's this tabletop hydroponic garden thing on tables in a food pantry in a parking lot. And I'm like, that's not regenerative agriculture, Zach. Like it isn't. Like that's what, I mean, that's, you know, you're going to stand in a field and hold a pile of dirt and say, this is what I'm doing. But like really, Allegria, this thing that you want to scale is with Bank of America, which put people out of their homes. You know, the irony of Bank of America funding like kale grown in soil socks, you know, on a food pantry parking lot. That's really depressing. And the same people that with his income fund were connected to this health system in Philadelphia, because one of the offices of this fund, like not his fund, but the overall organization is here. And like they were putting Fitbits on kids in a neighborhood that was like in the center of the heroin epidemic. Like it's a low income community. And they were training kids, this organization called Studio Ludo, who was also working with Alphabet, with drones and Fitbits to supposedly track playground use so they could more efficiently redesign it, right? Like you really need to put Fitbits on kids and acclimatize them to drones to do a playground upgrade. I don't think so, Studio Ludo. And so like, I'm trying to tell this guy, like I wrote this really long letter to say, listen, maybe you don't know what's really happening here, but let me tell you, because I'm here and this is how, this is who this is connected to. Like the, maybe the back end, you don't know what the back end is plugged into. It's plugged into this and it looks like Fitbit and it looks like, you know, kale growing in a parking lot, you know, on a table. It's not what, you know, what you're, it's not how you're representing yourself to the world. And, you know, so it's like about a week later and finally today he has like sort of a non-response that doesn't respond to any of the things I raised. And everyone's just like, oh, you know, thank you so, you know, we're so wonderful. And it's this, like, I guess that's why I'm saying like, we need a collective organization that isn't lifting up any one heroic individual. Because people get caught up in these cults of personalities and like who's on with group and who, no, you got to do your own work. Do your own work and find people to build stuff with you. And like, let's do it legitimately because the wealth is so concentrated. Bank of America is never going to be in it to like actually solve poverty for poor people. Like the solutionism that they're offering isn't the answer. It isn't. And, you know, they're just one of those red 12-foot devils, you know, saying, here, have some kale, but first your nudge band, you know, we needed to like scan it to make sure it's right for your DNA. And anyway, it's just, it's overwhelming sometimes because like, even if you have all of the facts and you can sort of lay it out, there's a very strong inclination for people to not want to know.
That's the problem.
And I think if they knew, they wouldn't do it. Like, that's the thing I'm saying. Like, if we know, I'm not saying we have to give into it. I'm not saying knowing it means it will happen. But if you completely spend all this energy trying to not know it, you're going to waste all of this energy that you could be putting into something else.
Yeah, I think that that's the same thing that I come across too. It's like, I try to be more conscious these days of coming off negative or at least supplying a perspective that gives empowerment or like we can do this or like we can beat this sort of thing, because yeah, people really quickly do want to shut down that conversation just out of like self-preservation in the moment because they don't want to make that connection or they don't want to think that it's as bad as it is or that these entities or that this system is as dark as it is. But once you get past that hurdle, then you're running again. Yeah, exactly. And there's going to be more hurdles along the way. It's not easy, but I really like how I mentioned it to you in email that I came across the, like just a small Refuse Fascism gathering in front of Twitter. And they're there like probably at least once a month. And it's pretty much just an anti-Trump demonstration, which I'm like, hell yeah, guys, do your thing, you know, make your statements, get out there. And this gathering seemed a little bit different. It was like, seemed to be led by a couple of black women who were sort of like getting everybody involved and passing the mic out, and were both great speakers themselves, like really energetic and just stream of consciousness, like, you know, powerful. And I stopped my bike. So I was like kind of listening and I'm like, are they passing the mic around? I'm like, all right, we'll just see what happens here. And I was like, it was like cold out. I had my jacket on and my bandana over my face and my hood on and stuff. And she looks at me and she's like, all right, guy with the bike, what's up? And then I was like, all right, yeah, I guess I'm supposed to do this. So I'm like nowhere near as eloquent or as articulate as I wanted to be. But what I found just trying to like speak from the heart and off the cuff was just like, when I mention where this is not a political problem that we're up against, it's not a political enemy, it's a human issue of us and our togetherness that's going to help us get past whatever it is we're up against, all the problems that we're talking about. Got a good reaction from that. And then like, it's like awesome. It's invigorating to get like a little bit of energy back from people. And then, you know, I'm like, this is Refuse Fascism. What about biofascism? Let me mention that real quick. And they got some people stirring a little bit on it, you know, and not that I had time.
If you give them the lens, then they can start to apply it. Right?
Exactly. And I think that's the secret, the open secret is that we all have the tools, right? And together we have the tools.
And especially that, I mean, I think that there is stuff energetically, like there is something that is activated beyond what we can see. And I think that people, I think they can tell if you're coming at things in an authentic way. Like, I think that actually really matters. I'm not saying that other people in that group weren't that, but like, I think, especially in this moment where people are so separated from one another, if you can engage people from like just a deeply human space, it like reverberates. I think it has a certain power to it.
I think that that's like, talk about the, like the magical water bag, electrical water bags that we are, like whatever it is that makes us human and gives us these abilities, these innate, like just intrinsic heartfelt things that even if we don't know, we know, like the gut feeling kind of thing. And to go back to childhood's end, the novel, the overlords are super interested in humans in general, but the thing that they're most interested in that is like a point of emphasis throughout the novel is human extrasensory perception and sort of like psychic abilities, telepathy, and it's revealed later on, the like the head overlord is giving answers to like the last human, and he tells him that the reason you're scared of our figure, of our like devilish, of our appearance, the reason that our appearance has been part of your lore for hundreds of thousands of years or whatever, is because you had future memories of us coming to you. So it's like, it takes like the spiritual and the science fiction and like all this different stuff. And like the fact that Arthur C. Clarke, you know, wrote 2001: A Space Odyssey, and there's a lot of interesting connections to Kubrick and like the moon landing and all this stuff, that's like whatever was going on in that time where they chose to emphasize these ideas. I'm like, what's really going on here, you know?
Yeah. Well, I often tell people too, like I've mentioned in my talks, I've been reading A Wrinkle in Time, which is a kid's book. But, you know, it was a book I read when I was in elementary school or like early middle school. It was in like the early 1970s, but Madeleine L'Engle. But it was sort of like multiple dimensions across time, and this family, the father's missing and he's a physicist and he's trapped in sort of a technocracy, and the entity is IT, right? It's you know, IT is sort of holding them captive, and in the end, sort of, you know, the main heroine of the little girl, you know, it's like love. It's her love for her brother that overcomes this technocratic system. So, you know, I think we're building it. Like, and I think it's interesting because we're conditioned to imagine power, I think, looking a certain way, you know, like, or force, or like as a physical manifestation of strength or fortitude. And I don't think I think it can be other things than maybe our stereotype of a powerful force standing against this. And you know, again, looking to India, looking at especially my understanding is a lot of the people who are standing there are of the Sikh, you know, religion, and they're actually looking at both the parallel of the physical and the sacred, the spirit, like that's part of their cultural practice. And each person has this destiny to fulfill, but a lot of their work, their engagement is in praying and feeding people and being communal and sharing sacred music, and the way in which that strength looks. And I think, you know, another aspect of strength of being like the maternal feminism, right? Like the sacred feminine, the birthing aspect, and even quiet individual actions. Like, you know, I've been really trapped in my house a lot, and I'm in Philly, and I can't imagine what it's like to be in California. I'm sure it's even worse, but like, I'm usually the only one outside not wearing a mask. You know, it's mentally difficult. But you know, I was out the other day cause I had to take my car to the shop, and you know, I ended up just walking down the sidewalk, and there were these roses that had been thrown out like past their prime in the trash. And I was like, oh, I should take this rose somewhere. And I ended up taking it to this Catholic cathedral where they were having, like, a several years ago, they had this education conference that I knew was bad news at the time. I'm like, the people who are here, they're bad news people. And so I'm like, I'm taking this rose. I'm going to say, we don't consent, you know, because I know the Vatican Bank is a big part of this. And it was just a small action. And, you know, it's, you know, 3 or 4 blocks from my house. It's this preparatory school that our current mayor and the mayor working with Michael Bloomberg, they were both alums. And there's like a small park in front, and it's fenced, but I mean, it's open to cars. So you can just walk in, you know, and I, you know, sort of, you know, created some kind of, you know, sacred space for this little, like, you know, ceremony that I was going to do by myself with my like trash can rose. And the security guard like came out and they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm here with my flower. You know, I'm just sitting in the middle of like this thing with nobody around. And, you know, somehow I'm a threat, but they're like, okay. Like you can, you know, and, you know, I ended up like just sort of just saying, we don't consent to this. We don't want to be part of the internet of bodies. We don't want to do synthetic biology. We think that this is anti-life. And like, I walked up to like lay the rose down on the step of the cathedral. And like, right as I put my foot on the first step to go up, like the noon bell rang and it was like, bong. And it was like, oh my gosh, like something is breaking through here. Like, and I didn't plan it to be that way. It just unfolded that way. And so I think sometimes like, surely you can have resistances of, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people in streets that would the way we've seen in Europe, but then sometimes it can just be small acts, and it breaks the continuum if we have that sort of like coming from a heart space to break through. And you know, one of the people who just I lean on a lot is John Trudell, you know, who was part of the Alcatraz, you know, island occupation, and, you know, a spoken word poet and an artist and such a deep prophetic thinker. And he, you know, I give this to people. So I would say, just look him up. You know, he has quite a few talks online. He's since passed, but, you know, he talks about this technologic, and that we need to be thinkers. He talks about thinking versus believing, that thinking is active and engaged as opposed to believing is just sitting there and not being reactive, as thinking is participating, and that we have to put our body and our mind up against this machine of technologic. He talks about it being a predator energy, and that all the ancestors up till today have been doing this work. Like, we're not the first to do this work. People have done it. They have always been doing it. And now it is our moment to do this work. If we can see the work that has to be done, it is our moment to do the work. And, you know, we have to hope, we have to believe in our heart that there's a larger purpose, I think, like from the creator to do it. And
this work is what got us here. So I recognize that and I see that. And I really enjoyed your story of intention there. And I try to reflect on things like that in my daily life too, because when I talk about these big picture things, I'm like, I'm not going to change the world. I'm not going to take down Amazon. Like, no. But I can change the world, because every choice I make, it's all reverberating throughout our realm and us connecting, you know, making the choice to go outside, whatever you do, it all reflects on all of our existence. So when there is that space for the work to be done, I think it's naturally to step into it, you know. And I liked the point you made about the Indian farmers who, you know, music, food, like making food with people, serving food to people is one of my favorite things in the universe. And it just gives me a satisfaction that in the moment, like, I'm just going with the flow. I'm not like, oh, this is so sacred, this is amazing. It's just like, it flows through me. You know, it's something that's expressed naturally. And then the reciprocation of seeing somebody appreciate what you offer to them. And even just being together with people, sitting in the park together, like that was me and Janice's thing for the first like 4 months of lockdowns and stuff, when literally everything was closed, and everything's closed again, by the way. But we would go up to the park by our house. It's on a real high hill in San Francisco, and just sit around, read books sometimes just talk, sometimes sit in silence, like sometimes invite a few friends and just share space and yeah, emotion and feeling. And to me, that changes the world. It changes my life for the better. It's not saying it's going to take down Amazon, but things like that, and applying it and spreading it, sharing it and multiplying it.
When you get good energy out, you're good putting energy. Good energy into the field. So,
well, Allison, yeah. I definitely have like a million other things I'd love to talk to you about, but I really like the way we brought this around to something positive and sharing some positive energy here. So
I had a soup weekend too. I had people come over for soup.
Oh, it sounds
and
awesome.
This is the interconnection. Someone listened to one of my podcasts who runs, he grows fungi like in North Philly. He has like a specialty farm box of exotic mushrooms. And so he's like, I want to give you these mushrooms because like I just appreciated what you did. So I went and got the mushrooms. I'm like, this is a lot. Like, I like mushrooms. I'm like, this is a lot of mushrooms. And I'm like, I'm going to make mushroom soup and I'm going to invite people over. So then we all, and even my husband, like it was vegan because I'm getting better at like trying to do more other, you know, inclusive food stuff. And so like I made this, it was a new recipe. And my husband, who is like decidedly not a vegan guy, that was so good. I had two bowls.
Yes.
But like, so we all grew from the experience. We had about 10 or 12 people over by the fire and it was a mix. It was a mix of just beautiful people. We have like, would never have found each other otherwise.
I love stuff like that. It's like that's the best. That sounds awesome. And also mushrooms as the fungus.
The mycelium.
It's amazing. Like that's a whole different universal dimensional talk on its own right there.
I know. We have to come back and talk about that.
That's a good one. Well, it's been such an honor and a pleasure. I've really enjoyed every minute of this. And I really thank you so much for your time and sharing this space with me. Is there anything else you want to wrap up or add to our discussion?
No, I think we just go forth with love, right?
Go forth with love.
We do our best. We know that we're fragile and we know that we'll make mistakes, but we still do our best. And you listen to your gut. Listen to your gut and go forth with love. And I think we'll find our way through.
Yeah, we'll keep going. And I think we got this. I'm feeling really good about it. So Allison, thank you so much. Everybody go to wrenchinthegears.com. Wow, what a talk. Thank you so much, Allison. I really appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, no, it sounds like you're doing a lot of digging too.
I'm trying, you know, it's in my nature. I got into the world of like conspiracy when I was like 17, 18, like dumb high schooler smoking too much weed. Yeah. And then have grown.
I got into it too late.
Yeah. No, I think you're doing an excellent job. And I think that I'm finally showing maturity and kind of feel like I'm actually like realizing some of the potential that I have by getting into this more tangible real world stuff that you're kind of exposing and presenting to people. And I'm like, this feels right. Like I retweeted.
It's like a toolbox. Like I think if we could give people some of these tools and say it's colonization, folks, it's empire, it's military. We don't have to do this.
Exactly. And into that regard, one of my first interactions with you was retweeting one of your tweets about sort of exactly encompassing all the work. And then you finished it with like, this is our destiny. Like we were made for this work. And I'm like, you know what? She's right. Like she's damn right. And I'm here for it. And I'm going to spend the time. And when I look at like this podcast, for example, like I don't have a huge platform. I don't expect to be, you know, Whitney Webb with 85,000 followers.
But I don't think that's it.
No, I know. That's what I'm
saying. I mean, no shade, but like, I don't, to me that ends up, you know, I mean, but it's like, then it becomes another consumer model of the thing.
It is. It becomes a consumer model.
It's another thing. It's a different kind of a thing. And so I think this is like my friend Cliff, who he's like one of these people. He like the first week I didn't know him and we connected on a thread and he's in Seattle and he practices Santo Daime. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It's like I don't know exactly. It's a religion from the Amazonia area, like that was started in the 30s or 40s. And so it's this blending of like liberation theology and like Amazonian, like Curandera and like Yoruba, like African, like it's a mix of all this stuff. And it's very, and it also has like psychedelic stuff, which I, you know, about that. But these visions, and it's very, but he knew immediately that this was all wrong. And he went to the hospitals, like, cause he was right near where the Seattle outbreak was. And he's like going around. And So anyway, like he promises me after the zombie apocalypse, like there is a really good potluck in the Valley of Love. That's what Chris Clifford says. So I'm like, okay, we just have to get to the Valley. He's like, it's already all fixed, Allison. It's already all done and it's fine, but we just have to get through the park. But he said that you never, you can't change people and you just can put your intention out in the world. That's and you it. May never know where it goes. You may never know. You might find, you know, people might find their way to you and you might get that path, but like there is some greater power that takes it out.
It is the power. And
it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to get out to 20,000 people. If you get out to one or two of the right people, that's all that matters.
And that was my whole intention with this is like, if I can, you know, get some of my thoughts out there for one, expand on my own thoughts and research and viewpoints, share it with other people, make connections, which is happening. And then for me right now, like this podcast that we are recording is going to be a tool for me to share with friends and family in a personal regard, because I can share information with people, but it's a lot different when you're like, oh, hey, watch this video of so-and-so. They're so right. Like you got to listen and then be like, hey, you know, I did this podcast with this very interesting, intelligent person who's has a lot of interesting information to share, and we had a really good discussion. Maybe you could check it out. And I think that that has like a ton of potential, and it feels right and it feels good. And I'm
because you stoked. Can model it too. It's like, you know what? You don't have to be a superstar to do this. Exactly. I don't have a credential to do this. I didn't train to do this. I'm a mom that I fell into this thing. Just like, you know, you're someone who fell into this thing. We all fell into it, and there's no like hierarchy to it. But if you like, I think by me putting myself out publicly about it, people are like, oh, well, she seems kind of like me, or that reminds me of somebody I know, or that doesn't, now it's not so scary because it's just a regular person saying it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I totally see that play out too. Like I shared some of your work with a few of my friends, and like instantly, like one friend who like never really even listens to anything I send him, but he's always like down to have a conversation, but he never like takes the time. He'll like skim the surface just so he can like know what I'm talking about if I reference it. But, and he was like, got probably like 30 minutes into one of the, like the Mind Wars podcast that you did with that Scottish guy. And he was like, what blockchain education and blah, like he was like engaged with it. And then my other friend who's like a fellow old school conspiracy theorist kind of guy, he's watched all of your Fourth Industrial Revolution videos, like all five parts. And
well, it's so funny because Jason like was like, and I didn't even know Jason really before this, although he was connected to some people that I organized with locally, who again, they're all wearing masks, so I can't organize with them now, but whatever. And you know, I keep saying like no hard feelings, like when you it's cool for me to show up without a mask, let me know and I will come back. But he's like, yeah, I'm going to drive from Denver to film you. And I'm like, what? That seems weird. I mean, not weird, but I'm like, really? But he was right. Cause I think it's a different medium. People who might not sit down and read a whole long blog, they'll listen to you in the car.
Yeah.
Or while they're jogging or something.
Totally.
You know? Weird.
Yeah. I mean, that's a commitment though, too, for him to do that. I was like, this is a really well put together setup. See, like it's very
professional. It's really good. I know. I remember, no, Jason's really good. I'm excited because I think, knock on wood, like we're going to go to Salt Lake City, which is like and the other ARPA node, right? And there's a lot going on. That's where the social impact bond is and like the Mormons and whatever. And so he's going to meet me out there. We're going to like maybe drive around Salt Lake and film. So
awesome. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it'll be good. All right. Well, all right, thank Allison. You for fitting me in.
No, thank you so much. And I'm sure we'll speak again at some point, but I'll share this with you and all that good stuff. And perhaps we can circle back one of these days and see where we're at and offer some more insight and intention for this world.
No, I mean, everything is new. Like, I feel like these days I want to like focus more on some of the nanotech stuff because
that's the level beyond the deep level that you're already kind of
into. It's all electrical engineering. It is literally all electrical engineering, which again, like I hate all this stuff. I hate economy. I hate tech. I hate finance. Like sucks. I'm an art historian. I do not like any of this shit. Like I hate it. Like electrical engineering. Fuck. I don't want to have to know that, but like literally that is what they're talking about. So
signals intelligence. What?
Yes. You should definitely look up IDF, like look up the autism thing.
I will. That sounds...
I can't remember if it's 9600 or 9200. I can't remember, but if you put up ITF, IDF and autism, it'll come up. And like, man, like I think that they're building, not exactly cyborg, but I think they're building the people they want.
Super soldier, cyborg, neurologically engineered. Yeah, it's wow.
I have to say, I think that my mentor that I lost, like, I wonder if something didn't happen to him. Because I can't explain anything. Like, he was very active in the anti-globalization, like, this battle of Seattle, like, all of, like, he was, like, for years and years and years, and he was at Standing Rock, and I'm like, did they spray stuff on you? Like he had a seizure, like, a couple years ago, and I'm like, is there some kind of neural tech going on? Like, because I can't understand, like, how you could hate me. Like, I'm just doing what you told me to do. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I've heard similar stories and concepts like that passed around. And there's, if you get into the world of like more DARPA nanotech and like neurological engineering type stuff, it's definitely, I mean, there's like patents and papers about this stuff, but the physical evidence of it isn't necessarily all that tangible. But the thing about these things is if they're talking about it, then they're probably doing some of it, you know what I'm saying? So super interesting.
All right.
Allison,
well, take care.
I appreciate you.
All right. You too. Bye, Shane.
Have a good night.
You too. Good night.